For October 10th, 2025, we talk about Hades 2, Final Fantasy Tactics The Evil East Chronicles, Nine Kings, and much more. Welcome to Level 561. My name is Kay Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, everybody. Ben, were you here last time?
I was out last week. Originally, I was going to go to a dinner, but I got vaccinated for flu and COVID on Monday. And so I was sick and not doing anything on Tuesday.
Everybody that I have talked to, including myself... Okay, everybody I've talked that I've talked to, and also myself, because I'm not talking to myself. Everybody that I know who has gotten one has been has been completely laid up by one or the other or the combination. So sucks you had to miss a dinner.
Yeah, I was gonna say my partner absolutely fine. So it's like not fair.
And she got vaccinated as well.
We both got it at the same time. So which in hindsight. Might want to stagger those in case both people go down, but you know,
it's probably wise.
Yeah.
What have you
been up to besides recovering?
Over the weekend, we went out, we did a, dog Halloween contest in my old neighborhood of Cap Hill. Okay. I'll try and find and post a picture of it in the back area, in the backstage. But essentially, our 15-year-old dog dressed up like a banana.
Hell yeah.
But he didn't participate in the costume contest, but we just watched like the line of people. I think some noteworthy costumes were there was a bulldog dressed as a bulldozer that would just run through the crowd of people when called upon. That was pretty good. And I think there's one that was a dust bunny where it was like people with sweeps and it was a dog that was a giant dust pile. That was kind of cute.
Oh, that's very creative.
Translate. Yeah. A lot of hot dog costumes and a lot of bee costumes for whatever reason. But
interesting. Yeah. The hot dog makes sense. The bees, I don't know that I follow.
Yeah.
Bee dogs and lobster dogs are like a thing, like a common.
Lobster dogs.
Yeah. And
I guess it's like, I don't know, maybe it's easy because a lot of people are wearing those like fumigation suits or whatever. So maybe it's just easy to get that for a human and then it follows from that. But
yeah,
I don't know.
Wait, back up. A lot of people are wearing fumigation suits.
Well, I'm saying if you need to, because it's a paired costume, you got to dress along with your dog.
Oh, I see. I see. So wait, what did you dress as to pair with the banana?
We did not.
They didn't participate.
We didn't enter. We just wanted... some of us wanted an excuse to dress up Cooper, so that's what we did.
I mean, a banana dog, obviously you go as with a gorilla, right?
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that could work.
You go for like the full Fruit of the Loom set. Everyone goes as a different fruit.
There was one dog that was dressed like Neapolitan ice cream, so we were trying to find them after the parade, but did not see them.
That is very cute.
Yeah.
Dennis, how about you? What's going on?
Oh, not much. Just trying not to die.
Yeah.
So are we all.
Any particular brushes with death recently?
Oh, just, you know, I love fall, but I feel like death every single time.
Oh, God.
I just, you know, about 90% of the season, I'll wake up feeling like a grenade went off in my throat or get a sinus infection or what have you. Mm-hmm. This time it was the latter. But I'm getting better. Like I can feel it coming.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I do a little e-visit thing with the doctor where it's like, hey, I know what this is. I need an antibiotic.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, they probably have to go through the script and everything of, tell me about your symptoms. Like it's this, and this, it's a sinus infection. I need an antibiotic. Okay. Well, do you want to come in and meet? No, I'm fine doing an e-visit. I know what this is.
Yeah.
And they do that. And then eventually, thankfully, he was pretty quick in writing the script. So
that's good.
I got on it, a day or two back. And that should clear it out pretty fast here.
Mm-hmm.
But if I sound different or more like I'm on death's door during this recording, You'll know why.
Your voice sounds a little scratchy, a little hazy, but not terribly so.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just from screaming at the kids all day. That's part of the crisis.
Yeah. No. Yeah. No, I hate that kind of sick where like it is low grade and pervasive to the point where you mm-hmm. like, I don't even remember what it feels like to feel good.
Oh God. Yeah. And I'm the kind of dumbass that just like, I don't, it doesn't occur to me to try to get ahead of it. Like mm-hmm. this year was an anomaly. Like I said, I'm finally learning. Usually it's just like, well, feel kind of crappy because it's fall. It'll go away in a bit. And then it doesn't.
Especially if it's a video visit, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. So, I did good this time. Hopefully this is, the worst thing mm-hmm. that I have come my way this fall.
At least there's a buffer. Hopefully this gets you through the holidays at the very least.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That'd be nice.
Yes.
Usually this stuff is very quick to clear things up. So
yeah.
On the mend.
Cool. I've been getting ready for Portland. And doing that in addition to just a bunch of like organizing and decluttering kind of stuff, which is emotionally taxing for me.
Oh no.
I hold on to everything. You have no idea. And so like stuff just tends to get packed away and then I go dredge it out. And then it's just like, oh my God, that's a project that I intended to start, but I didn't. That's just look at all the wasted money. And then it's like, oh God, do I want to get rid of this thing? Like, cause I can attach emotional value to like any object.
Kay, I remember you sending us pictures of your coiled, labeled, and organized cables for literally everything.
They're right over there. They're in Sterilite bins.
They're at hand right now.
Yeah, man. I've reduced them, you know, like maybe I only need three spares of a given cord, you know?
Girl, seek help.
It's too late. It's too late for me. But no, like it is gratifying to me when there is a need that I can always go get it. And also like, you know, it, like even for my family, it's just like, okay, oh, I need a charger for this. And I'm like, send me a picture of the port because I can, I can swing by when I'm out and I can just drop it in your mailbox or something.
Yeah. So okay. My grandparents could blame the Great Depression for having that attitude of like, save everything. What's your excuse?
Oh, profound emotional problems.
Okay.
Also Great Depression. Yeah.
Yeah. good grand depression.
We peaked. We peaked.
So I feel like the threshold goes up where you start being like, all right, I can actually get rid of some of this stuff. Are you holding the line or is that bending at all for you?
Some of it is bending. It all just kind of depends. I'm doing like it's called the four box method. Which is like you've got a box for like, okay, this stays in this room. This is going to be donated or sold. There's a box for this needs to like go elsewhere. And there's a box for trash. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that system has held pretty well, although like it's a couple of boxes in some instances, like banker's boxes, to do some of the sorting.
So I'm going to enable you. What is like the most clutch random cable thing, whatever that you've had been able to pull out to help someone?
I had to help my brother do a hard drive transfer with a USB-A to USB-A. and that is like an incredibly rare need for like a particular kind of hard drive enclosure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah. So felt pretty proud about that one.
Well done. Well done.
Other thing I've been doing, this is video game related, but a while back I talked about my piranha plant Lego.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, look at the little guy.
Yeah. And this past weekend, it just came out. This is a new release, the Lego Game Boy.
Oh,
holy shit. Wait, is that functional?
No, but it does have like the lenticular kind of hologram thing.
So okay, because on the webcam, it looks like
the Nintendo. Yeah,
yeah.
There are little cards that you put in behind the plastic screen there.
Okay.
Yeah. This is, it's really neat. Like the buttons,
man.
they're like padded in different ways to where they have like a little bit of extra like give, you know?
Oh, so, really?
Yeah. So like you can press in, like there's a rubber band behind some of them, and there's like a rubber bumper behind the D-pad. Like the power switch clicks.
Oh, that's satisfying.
Yeah, no. And like, I've never put together the Lego, like video game hardware, but like on the inside, like there's detail that you're never going to see unless it's, unless it's while you're putting it together up to the point where, that it comes with my favorite thing. It comes with two Lego Game Boy games to put into it. Yeah. To put in
Legend
the
Legend of Zelda, and is that which Mario is that?
Super Mario Land and Legend of Zelda okay. Link's Awakening. They're almost identical, except for the fact that I need to pull this off and see if it shows up on the webcam. This is just for the assembled audience. The Zelda one, which is true to life, has a save battery in it.
Ha!
You see that by my index finger?
Yeah.
The Mario one doesn't have that. Like that is real because you could save the game in Zelda Link's Awakening. It has this the save battery, the little coin battery inside of it.
Wow. All right. So I just figured out the world's most complicated racket. We get a bunch of those cartridges Lego style and then post them online pretending they're the real thing.
People do that. Post dummy. People will post dummy listings like that. It's actually a problem in game.
Ours is going to be better because when they get chipped, they'll at least be like, oh, cool Lego.
Oh, neat. <That's> it. So yeah, I was really pleased with this. It's like this perfect like sweet spot where it is not especially expensive either. Like the whole thing, yeah, I don't know.
That's unlike Lego.
I know, yeah. Right? Well, because it's small, right? Like the Lego NES is huge and has like a TV. It's like $200 or something like that. That's not for me. This, however, at like $45. You know, and an afternoon to pick it put together is totally for me.
Yeah. It's the like original Chonker model. It looks like too.
Yeah.
Did you all have that or like when I only came along to Game Boy for the Game Boy Pocket.
I did have this one. In fact, I still have it. See our earlier conversation. I still have my original kid Game Boy.
Super cool.
Yeah. But yeah, that's me. I think we can talk about video games proper now, not just block
replicas,
buildings, facsimiles of them. To do that, we need to do the regular kind of show, What with the Grind, the Multiplayer, and the End Boss. And why don't we get started with
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the last period of time or so. Ben, you have been away the longest, so I will throw it to you.
I have. I don't have anything new-ish, but whatever. I'll get started, I guess.
Okay.
I got two. The first one is I've continued playing Asuka, the Valheim Satisfactory mashup-like. The new thing that I've tried on in the past week is I started a multiplayer server with it with some friends in the area. So ironically, friends that are in the same city, we decided to socialize online and play a multiplayer game instead.
That's reasonable, I think.
Yeah. We haven't gotten too far into it. We've only gotten a couple hours into it. But the thing that I noticed is there's kind of less configuration options when you're doing multiplayer for like what the world options are, which could kind of understand. Since they're like hosting the server themselves, like maybe there's restrictions on how much variance they want there or in any case, the main difference is you can't turn off like raids that happen from the enemies. So you do have to like engage with that system. And then the main difference with this time around versus my previous times is I wanted to start off and build my city next to what's called a mine, which is like really good for kind of the second tier of like tools that you make. Mm-hmm. So I started out by just like running around the entire map to try and find one. And in doing so, I've seen way more of the world than I have than I've ever done in my original save game. Uh-huh. So something I realized is that as you're kind of building up this town or whatever, you're not really pushed to go to like different biomes or explore the island unless you want to. So that kind of contrasts with Valheim a bit, where in Valheim, you're kind of gated by the biome that you're in. So once you've kind of maximized like everything you can do in a certain area, you're kind of pushed to go to the next area over.
Because that's where the resources nodes
exactly. are. Exactly. Yeah. So you can get the next better resources to build the next better thing and then go from there. Mm-hmm. So I just thought it was interesting that the game doesn't really seem to have like an organic way to do that same sort of thing for you. So I saw like maybe three or four different like boss types and like areas of interest that I hadn't seen before. But I still haven't found like a full like view of the map yet. So I don't know if I'll do that on this run or not, but eventually found a mine and started building there. And then I was playing with just one other person while the third person was watching. And so starting to set up like initial camps and kind of speed run that, first part of the tech tree. Mm-hmm. So we'll see where it goes from there, but yeah, so far it's good, but we really haven't hit any friction yet. So
yeah,
not much to say about it either way.
So the enemy raids haven't bit you yet?
Not yet. Yeah. It's like literally been like 2 or 3 days in game and we have one villager. I think the one thing that's kind of interesting is it's a lot easier to kind of pull other people up when you're doing multiplayer, where it's like instead of them having to start from scratch and like find like, each individual stone and each individual stick, if you already have like a working axe, you can more easily create that tool for them than give it to them. And yeah. So it's like a lot easier to kind of fast track some things. So I hope that sort of thing kind of carries on into the upper tiers. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
In terms of combat, does it scale at all with the number of players in the game? Or is it like, hey, if you got 3 player characters in the game, you're just gonna stop everyone?
I didn't engage with the system in my single player game, so I'm not sure. I would assume that there's, you know, like more people the longer time progresses. But that's just a hunch. I have nothing to confirm that either way.
Yeah.
So TBD.
Mm-hmm.
But
fair enough.
Anyway, I was going to move on to the next thing that I've been playing, which is something I picked up on Steam sale and which was recommended on the podcast, which is Nine Kings.
Oh, yay! Yeah.
So that's the one where it's like you start off on a 3x3 grid. You have a deck of cards that are like buildings or units or buffs or spells. And you plant down those things on this plot and you can upgrade them or you can destroy them and build other things. And kind of goes through a series of battles for, I don't know how many rounds, like 30 rounds or something like that. And then, you're playing as a king, and each king's have asymmetric powers, and you slowly unlock it as you played. So I believe, Dennis, you're the one who played this before on Game Pass.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So I've only dabbled a little bit. I think I've done maybe like 3 or 4 runs through the game. I've unlocked probably about as many kings, like 3 or 4 of them. I've unlocked like the sacrifice, the gold, the nature, the spells, and I have nothing. So I guess 5.
Yeah.
So at this point, I'm still just kind of dabbling and like unlocking things. So I don't have the surest of footing yet. And I was thinking of how to describe it earlier today. I think it was cautiously pessimistic is how I feel about the game.
Fair enough.
Where I, you know, there's a lot of randomness and stuff. What I'm waiting to see is once you have like everything unlocked and once you kind of know all the meta, can you really go about influencing the success of a run? And like right now, I think I'm playing on the lowest difficulty. And I had like the last run that I finished was one with the King of Gold, which is their deck of cards is like usually reinforces something having to do with your gold count. So like, for example, they have a building where it's a turret. The attack speed increases every round based on how much gold you have, or you can have mercenaries where it's like they recruit people based on how much gold you have, things like that. So I had like basically a runaway victory with that, because every so often you unlock like globalized perks. And I think I got three in a row that were the same one, which is when you sacrifice a card, it's times three gold value. So,
oh yeah, there's a little well off to the side where if you don't want to play anything, you just drop a card in the well for some money.
Yeah. Okay. And so the base thing that happens is you sacrifice a card and that's your action for the round, but you get 9 gold for it. So seemingly to spend that on something else, perhaps. But there's a perk where it'll times by 3. So when you sacrifice a card, it's worth 27. And the going rate for a card, like when you buy one, is about 40 gold or so. But those stack. So the next round when there are upgrade options, I happen to get the same one again. And it's like, well, might as well pick that. And so then,
was it, I don't think I've gotten that. Was it times 9 or was it cubed?
So when you sacrifice a card after you have 2 stacks of it, so the first one is 27, the second one now is 81. And I got one more round where it was an option as well. And so
Holy shit,
might as well pick it. And yeah, so every sacrifice card is worth 43 now. And so basically every round from after that, it was like, well, no other action or no building I can build is worth getting 243 gold. So that's what I was doing essentially every round.
I assume because you had mercenaries.
Yes, I had mercenaries, yeah. And I had the turrets. And
oh, okay, so both.
And then you would get to a market round where it's like it's the same thing in Slay the Spire, where you have like a merchant and you can buy things from the shop. And so every time I got to that, I would buy out the shop. And then reload the next shop and then buy out the shop. And then, and so you can only do it for so long.
Is there not a hand limit?
There's not. And so by the end of it, I think I bought through 4 shops by the end of it. So I had something like 30 or 40 cards. And so that was sweet. I had a great time. I was like, oh, this is amazing. And so when it got time to the end boss, I got the achievement for killing it in under 5 seconds because all my turrets are just going lightning fast and like killing everything. So it's like, this feels great, but it was hinging on the fact that I happened to get the same upgrade 3 times in a row. And I doubt I'm going to be able to repeat that. And I don't know if I'd even be able to nudge that in that direction in the future. So while I had a great time like breaking the game there, I don't, you know, it feels kind of like RNG and not like a skill-based decision. So, I mean, there is some sort of thing of like being able to recognize like potential and stuff like that, but I'm still too early in it to kind of deduce if it's like a skill-based or a luck-based type victory thing.
I think the way you just described it is probably the most accurate of it hinges, it rewards recognizing potential, but there's very little to it in terms of then leveraging that potential.
Yeah. Yeah.
The upgrade system, like you get a series of perks that as you level up a king, you get more perks for them. And eventually you can get pretty specific about like what you want to start with, and you can kind of almost force a certain win condition from the beginning. Mm. But I landed on not being super fun. Cause while, you know, there is that you recognize the potential, you set yourself up to be able to get this broken system. The card pool for each king is small enough that you will consistently get the cards to leverage, whatever you're setting up for.
Yeah, it is interesting. So one detail with this, I can't remember if we talked about, you probably did when on the original time we talked about it, but it's like the idea is you're facing different kings that you're fighting each round, and it might be a pool of like 3 or 4 of them at any given time, but whichever king you defeat, that's the pool of cards you choose from a reward. So if I'm fighting the gold king, I have gold cards as a reward. If I'm fighting the king of spells, I have spells as a reward, and those enter my hand. And so that's where you get some interesting like cross synergies. So there's like a builder king, for example, where you can build walls that like protect like your entire buildings, and they have to like destroy that before they can come and destroy the buildings. And so that's like a fun synergy with things like there's the nature king. It's like every 6 seconds in battle, it'll create like a turret on the battlefield permanently for the rest of the game. And so you can kind of pair those things together, which are really fun, like cross king synergies. So I'm still trying to discover and see like what all's there, like how many of those exist. But yeah, I mean,
and there's, I think a third of the way through the run, you get to choose an extra king to make war with. So it's a random set of starting kings, and then you can pick one to add as an adversary, and then 2/3 of the way through, you can pick one to remove or make peace with.
Yeah.
And so that does allow you to kind of fish for the synergies that you want, or remove a king that is just particularly annoying to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
But again, it's all kind of, those choices are fun to make, but then it's like, well, you know, the moment to moment of the game doesn't really have you doing much different.
So when you say like, oh, the moment to moment, I'm very curious about the statement that you made that like, this is a roguelike where randomness gets in the way of it. Are you saying because like moment to moment, you are not making like tactical decisions like you would be with Monster Train or Slay the Spire, or you're not doing twitch action like you would with Isaac or Gungeon? The fact that it's kind of an auto battler thing, do you think that is the missing element?
Well, I think this is a good comparison for this is Thronefall, which is like another like indie tower defense game where you kind of have limited things that you're doing throughout the game. And I think in that one, it's the same thing where you're kind of pointing at things to shoot at during the run where people are coming in. It's the same thing here where you have your base building is like, you click on enemies and it'll do some amount of damage to them. And depending upon the king, it's like a lot of damage, but high recharge time, or like a little bit of damage, but a chains and stuff like that. Like that's kind of how the variance is.
Or it's persistent, like the major king, like you mentioned. But I don't think I had any king except maybe the King of Greed. So 1 out of 9 is not great. I don't think I had any king where the strategy wasn't just hold the button down on the mouse on the biggest group of enemies.
Yeah. 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 So that's kind of a slightly disappointing thing that there's not more depth there or more variance there of the power abilities. But I kind of understand that their hands are a little bit tied where it's like they want you to be somewhat active and not have it be a complete auto battler, because otherwise that would be really boring, I guess. But they're kind of in a tough situation because it's like probably a decent number of people like myself want this to be more of like a tactical, like where should I build the buildings? What synergies can I lock so that everything's taken care of, and then I'm going to win the wave defense. And so I don't really want to interact too much with this. So you don't want to make the clicking like too powerful, but then at the same time, it's the way it's built is you need to be doing something probably. So,
right.
You didn't unlock the King of Progress, did you?
I don't think so. I don't think I have yet, but I've like played them and have their cards.
Yeah, I would go until you can play around with that as your king for a little bit, just because that was the set of cards that I found to be the most interesting challenge to break.
Okay. So, yeah. I mean,
It sounds like you've got the measure of it for the most part.
Yeah, I like how the cards are designed right now, where each set of 9 that are correlated to a king are like thematic and they have their own internal synergies, but then they're also like some interesting cross synergies among all the sets of cards. So it seems like in a good spot meta wise. But then, it's like for any of these types of games, these are typically like live service type games where it's like the way you keep it fresh is you make a new king with a new set of 9 cards and try and like shake up the meta like that. So who knows if they have any sort of plans of doing something like that, but
you've got me wondering how you could do a PvP mode. That'd be very interesting.
Yeah, that would be I'm enjoying it so far. Even if it turns out that it's like purely like luck-based like victory type thing, still having fun right now discovering like what the synergies are and like what the best type of decision is. So like right now I'd say it's like a BA game or whatever. So, if this is your type of jam, this is like a decent entry in it. So
nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's all I got.
Asuka and 9 Kings. Mm-hmm. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah. My entire week has been devoted to Bisexual Simulator 2.
Hades 2.
Okay. I took the plunge. I just had one of those nights where it's like, you know what? I deserve a treat. Uh-huh. And goddamn, this game is a treat.
Okay.
Oh, it's so good. And it, I think I mentioned on a previous week that I had tried to go back to the first Hades in preparation. And just kind of like, I'm not going to play it through from the start, and I'm not really, I can't remember where I was well enough to really go back to an old save. So watch a video and get ready for Hades. this, you know, getting into Hades 2 successfully captures the feeling that I wanted of getting into the Hades game and discovering all the systems and the stories and the interactions, et cetera. Mm-hmm. It recaptures that, that amazing feeling that the first game, I think, did so well and was the reason it was so, widely loved.
Cool.
So yeah, if anyone is not familiar, you know, it's themed around the gods of Olympus. Specifically, you are a child of Hades, raised as a witch. Your name is Milenoe, and you're on a mission to save your family. And I won't say more detailed than that. But
you know. I mean, like the slogan for it is, "You got to kill Kronos." Like,
yeah,
it's
kill time.
yeah, you got to kill time. My favorite thing posted about this, Will Hughes of. I assume Everything to Guppy. People tell me that's a show on this network. he posted the working title for Hades 2 is the War with Grandpa. Does anybody else remember that book? It's like
Yeah, I do remember.
What is
that?
The War with Grandpa?
It's like a kid's book. It's about a shitty little kid who is very annoyed that his grandpa is moving in with him, and he's not going to get attic room because his grandpa's going to get it, and they have like a little feud with each other.
Oh, it was turned into a movie. Robert De Niro.
Oh.
At least I think that's Robert. Yeah, Robert De Niro is Grandpa.
Okay,
which is a good casting for what you're describing. Anyway, yeah. So you know the first game was very much like Zagreus being like, "You're not my dad," or "I don't like you, Dad." And then
why is he Cartman?
Yeah,
that's not what he sounds like.
I'm sorry. No, I got to do the Hades mutter because everyone in this game, particularly the first game, has the Hades mutter of like. You're not my dad. I couldn't have you as my dad.
Yeah.
You know, and I have noticed Hades too. I mean, as full of personality as the first Hades was, Hades 2 does a really good job of having just a bunch of different vibes. So where, you know, in the first game, it was like, whether you're talking to Megara or Thanos or Nyx or, you know, God knows however many of them, they all kind of did that.
Right.
And it's just, it feels a little more varied. The characters, in the Crossroads, which is, this game's version of the House of Hades, where you're kind of doing all your social interaction. Mm-hmm. It starts out kind of simple and straightforward, and there's a whole bunch of stuff around the Crossroads that's not unlocked. And then as you play, ostensibly to go down and, kill Kronos down in the depths of Hades, who has made some kind of play to take over. You gradually unlock systems, get new options, combos, etc. And Hades 2, at least from what I'm remembering, has an even more kind of sprawling layout of stuff to discover.
Okay, like so is it still the same like progression of the same biomes? Because it's like four stages and then you're out in the original, right?
No. So you are this time you're going down into Hades instead of trying to,
because you're trying to reach Tartarus, right?
You are trying to reach Tartarus, but you know, part of the theming around you being a witch and kind of knowing how to be magically protected from prying eyes and move in the shadows is with Kronos kind of making his power play. You're kind of trying to go in the back door into Hades. And so you're seeing all different places. There's Eberus, which is like a woods that is halfway between the realm of mortals and the dead. That goes into Oceanus, which is same thing, but with the sea instead of the woods. and then you go into these, the plains of something. That was a really cool mix up of the formula for me. Cause in Hades, once you got down to a certain place, you know, it was all like get put in a room, beat the room, move to the next room. And rinse and repeat. And while the art was different and maybe some of the traps were different, you were kind of doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. Until you got to, what would they call that? The area where, you know, Cerberus is. And there were kind of branching paths that you had to go choose how many you went down. When you get to the fields, it is just these giant wide open areas that you can kind of get lost in wandering around. And that's a very interesting formula change from you know, what we've seen in the previous game and then the first two areas of Hades too.
Sorry, how far in is it before it starts branching out like that?
So that is two biomes down, or I guess okay. That is the third of four biomes. Because then there's another biome after that, Tartarus, but that, you know, even that looks different from what was in the first game, and then you kind of reach the end. But that's not all, folks. Okay. The first time you go to start your run, you'll see there's a path leading into Erebus. And then there is very clearly another path going up. And it's warded off at first, but there is an entire another set of biomes.
Okay.
That eventually you unlock, that instead of going down into Hades, you go up and across to Olympus.
Okay.
And that is that is as fully fleshed out as the descent down. Oh. So there is a whole nother Hades in this Hades. And not only that, there's a third door that I still haven't unlocked, that the way the characters are talking about it, there's a third fully fleshed out like path you can take through this game. So wild to me. And the path up does even more to play with the formula of clearing rooms, et cetera. Than going down. So it's just like 3x the kind of stuff to interact with.
How is this structured narratively? Is it like you do the going into Hades first, and then they're like, all right, now go over here, and then all right, now go over there? Or is it, are there like reasons why you might want to do one versus another on a given run?
Yeah. So trying to keep it general to not spoil too much. You know, Cronus has made this power play and taken over Hades, but you kind of find out from the gods as they're supporting you going down that they're kind of maybe in a little bit of trouble on Olympus.
Okay.
And that it seems like Cronus is maybe waging a war on two fronts or has some kind of like alternate scheme going on. And so you get engaged in that just because you're like, my family needs me. And even then, they, you know, like I said, people are talking about there, he seems to be massing forces in a third place as well. So what are we going to do about that? So the narratively, it's not linear, like do one, then the other, then the third. Although they do kind of unlock sequentially to not overwhelm you. You unlock before you're done with the first one.
Do you get like different rewards going? You know, like, yes. Is there like a different set of unlocks that you get?
Different set of unlocks, a different set of people and even gods that you interact with.
Okay. So does it change the boons that you get? Like,
Yes. And I haven't quite sussed out. So I've just gotten to the point that I can consistently go up without a big negative that you start with. Like, you know, Zagreus in the first game couldn't survive outside of Hades, right?
Yeah.
Like he would, you know, bleed to death or whatever. And Melenui initially has the same problem, that she's got the curse of the House of Hades. She can't exist outside the underworld. But you find a way to circumvent that. So I'm now for the first time really being able to explore, the upper area. Go ahead.
Another question is like, can you mix on these branches at all? Like, is it for a given run, do you just pick a branch, start to end, and then you're done? Or is it like, can you jump from one branch to another? Or do you choose the order in which you do them and do all three? Or
so what I've seen so far is like when you pick a direction, that's the direction you go.
Okay.
Given the themes in this game around like you are a stealthy person who can sneak around and be where she's not expected. I could totally see something opening up that, you know, allows you to start one way and then, you know, jump over to another. So, and if that sounds like a lot, it totally is. But what Hades does so incredibly well is kind of drip out these systems and do it in a diegetic and story, maybe more character forward fashion. But there's definitely plenty of story to it as well. That it never feels overwhelming. So like I said, I'm really digging into the second direction you can go. I just finally unlocked the sixth and final, I think, weapon that you can do. which is very funny because the first game had the adamant rail, which is just like, well, what if the Greeks had machine guns?
Yeah, yeah.
And the sixth weapon of this is called a cloak, but it is
also a machine gun.
Better, even better.
What is it?
Oh, well, okay. Spoiler. I don't know how much people go. Yeah, it is a mech suit.
Oh, just okay. Like
giant power gauntlets and a missile launcher on your back. So
you're technically invisible if you kill all of your enemies.
yeah, full on like lock on system and all that. But yeah, oh, just so yeah, mechanically and the layout of this game is masterful. Of course, all the characters and the, I wouldn't call any of it romances yet. You know, the gift giving between friends,
yeah,
is a lot of fun. I would probably say Hades 2 is 10 to 15% less horny than Hades.
Okay.
But it, you know, it's still got that element to it. Mm-hmm. I have unlocked hot springs for the classic anime "Let's Go to the Hot Springs" episodes that you can do with each character.
Okay.
Have not built the relationship to be able to do that yet, but it's in there. So yeah. But yeah, it is, you know, if you liked the first Hades, this is kind of building and expanding on it in almost every way.
Yeah. Milanui's abilities, aside from the different weapons that you get, like, is it still Hades where you've got the, you know, your melee attack, your cast, and then like a range?
Yeah.
And that's what you're working with?
Yes. Although I would say between weapons, it varies even further. So there's an attack, a special, and a cast for every weapon.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think the original Hades kind of was good about this as well, but like, For the basic couple of weapons that you start with, it's pretty like attack is close range stuff, the special is long range stuff, and then your cast is actually a like area of effect that you drop on the ground.
Okay.
The other, I guess, the biggest mechanical addition is that you also have a mana bar, a magic bar.
Okay.
And any one of those moves you can charge up and unleash, and it does something different. But it costs magic points.
Okay.
And so that kind of, there's a whole lot more combat options and then interesting boon and build options built around the idea that you have this magic as a resource. Mm-hmm. You can get boons that give you something powerful, but then it I think they call it like primes it or something, but it like reduces your max mana. You can have things that like make an attack more powerful, but then it costs mana every time you use it. Mm-hmm. And then just, you know, all the ways you can imagine that you modify that and make it interesting.
Your melee attacks do more when you have no mana.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. All that kind of stuff. So yeah, that is, you know, for, the combat mechanics, probably the biggest change.
Mm-hmm.
But it all, you know, it's a button mashy fun time.
Right. Yeah. You know, you're dodge rolling and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Not too intensive. It's not like a Devil May Cry. Really, in any given run, you identify, or my approach has been, identify early on, like which attack you can make the most broken, mm-hmm. or if your attack, your special, or your cast, and then really lean into having that be the thing that you lean on for the run and buff that up to be crazy.
Are there any like especially wild like god boon sets? You know, because like you know, you have the, you know, Poseidon, Aphrodite, Artemis, in the original, and there were different kinds of damage and whether it was damage over time, stuff like that. Like, is there anything that stands out just like, oh, this is a different way to engage with this, a different kind of build?
A little bit. One beef I've got is the three new characters they added is Hecate, your witch head mistress, Hestia, the god of flame, and Hephaestus, the god of the forge.
Okay.
Hecate, Hephaestus, I can't even keep it. Hecate, Hestia, Hephaestus.
Mm-hmm. The amount of time, Hestia, Hephaestus. Okay. Yes.
The amount of time I spent, wait, which one is way too high. But mm-hmm. anyway, Hephaestus, all of his boons, or, you know, a good number of his boons, are around having a big damage explosion attached to, you know, one of your moves that only happens every certain number of seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always like seeing when he comes along, because like I said, I'm focusing on one attack or one move that I want to be using a lot. And then I'll put Hephaestus on one of the alternates. And that way I kind of like every time I use it, I get this big boom. And that's fun. So it felt like he was designed, with kind of, making sure your other stuff stays relevant, even once you've broken one of the aspects of your build open.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any carryovers from the original Hades as far as like Poseidon still having like wave type stuff attacks? Yep. Or okay, okay.
And Aphrodite does weakness. What was
Artemis is critical.
Artemis is crits. They do an interesting thing where Artemis does not show up as a selectable option.
Oh.
She just kind of appears when she wants.
Okay.
And you can take whatever.
Cool. All right. Yeah. I was going to say, if they cut my girl, I'm not going to play this. Yeah.
All of the characters got I won't call it a redesign, but maybe a glow up.
Okay.
And they, you know, at first I was kind of jarred seeing these people that I knew so well from the first game looking different in the second, but I really like Artemis's design in the second game. So and
glow up includes the 15 to 10% less horny.
I mean, they even put clothes on Aphrodite. Mm-hmm. Granted, it's just like an armor bangle on her arm and nothing else. So, you know, if you're nude and then you're nude with like a bangle, that's 10 to 15% less horny, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Red Hot Chili Peppers were technically clothed when they would play with socks around their genitals. Yeah.
Yes. Sock dickities.
Oh, is that what they call it?
Or was it the Monty Python biggest dickus?
Me, I don't know.
Oh, that's a great bit. So Steam is saying that I've had the game for 2 weeks, but that doesn't feel right because I would have talked about it last week. When did I buy it? Anyway, I've got over 24 hours in it in probably about a week of actively playing it. And it is really, really scratching an itch that I didn't know I had been missing so bad. Hmm. Yeah. I haven't even talked about the familiar system. Guys, there's so many systems.
Okay.
I
vaguely remember a familiar system in the first one, but that might be just me making something up. Like this is a way to like get an option that'll fight around you, fight for you.
Yeah. But it's like a persistent, like you actually have a familiar now.
Okay.
A little froggy or a little birdie.
Oh,
or,
I've seen the frog. I've seen the frog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Freenus. Freenus is my boy. Or my girl. I'm not sure. I need to.
I don't know.
They haven't specified. Anyway, it is good times. Highly recommend.
Cool.
I believe this game is now the highest rated on Metacritic for games that have come out this year. So I think a lot of people agree with you. So
there's been a glut of really good games.
It is
For all the craziness in the world, at least we get in good video games.
At least there's more games than I can play.
So some good cake out there
for
us to eat. Or some good bread to go with our circus.
Yes. Something like that. I'm so tired.
But yeah, that's that. My entire week has been on that.
Cool. I have two and I can't really talk an awful lot about either of them.
Oh no.
So it's not that there's not much to say. It's just that one of them is Silent Hill F, which continues to be really good. The story is coming together a little bit more. Like the last session that I did, anybody who's listening, it's the Three Rights. If you've played it, you know what I just went through. Fucking ridiculous, story-wise. Ridiculous in terms of just really hard stuff to watch.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and an incredibly fun boss fight that I did that straight up looks like something out of Dark Souls. Like, it looks like... or like Elden Ring, it's like a missing frenzy boss fight or something like that, with all the fire and stuff going around.
So when you say stuff is coming together, I mean, Silent Hill has always been fairly vague about like what's actually happening or what stuff.
Yeah.
Like how is it coming together for Silent Hill, or is this game more overt in terms of giving answers?
No, it's so far it is obscure even compared to other Silent Hill games. Like, cause like in Silent Hill games, like the story itself is not necessarily hidden from you. you know, like the mechanics of why things are happening and the ways you're being manipulated are obscure. Like you don't realize that. And there are like reveals, obviously, Silent Hill 2 famously among them. But like broadly, you know, in Silent Hill 2, I am James Sunderland. I am looking for my dead wife. Silent Hill 1, I am Harry Mason. I am looking for my missing daughter. Silent Hill 3, I am Heather. I'm trying to get home. Like, you know, like there are those like remits. In this, it's like there is a disaster in this town that has made everybody go away except for my closest friends, and even they are kind of like falling one by one. And it's just like these kids scrambling to try and find a way to survive. Mm-hmm. As it is. And then even more confusingly, like in previous games, it was, you would go to, you know, a facility, you would go to a mall, and it would be the regular, you know, misty version of the mall. And then there would be the other world version of the mall with all the rust and blood and guts and stuff like that. And this, the other world, the dark world, is like a seemingly unrelated place that you go that doesn't match to a particular geometry. It's almost like you're playing two separate stories with the same main character, that you do not know what the connection between them is. And even still, for myself, I'm not entirely sure, but at least I know what the metaphor they're going for is.
That's what I was going to ask, is like, is there a thematic link between the two places at least, or?
Yes, but also that is more spoilery. Okay. I think that it has to do with, let's say, expected gender roles and dynamics.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, I think that is about as clear as I want to make it.
Sure.
And like, loyalty between friends and what, you know, different people feel owed by you, what different people feel you owe them. Yeah.
Specifically, if someone calls you partner, you know they are evil from the jump.
I've got my suspicions about Shu, but I'm waiting for them to be confirmed. I'm more worried about this fox mask guy in the Dark Shrine world. He doesn't seem to be up to any good.
He's too hot for Silent Hill.
Yeah, you know, there has to be something horrifying behind them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it continues to be good. Like the boss fight that I just did is amazing. I'm getting better at like reading the environments and stuff. Yeah, I'm excited to take it through to the end. I'll probably be streaming that the end of that this weekend based on, you know, time to beat averages and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. What was the other thing?
The other thing that I've been playing that I can't really talk much about is just because it's an incredibly old game that just got remade, is Final Fantasy Tactics, the Ivalice Chronicles.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is the remaster of Final Fantasy Tactics, the PlayStation original, that was made for modern systems. I'm playing it on Switch because it's like this perfect, you know, play it in bed before you go to sleep kind of game, you know? Perfect mission length for that. And yeah, boy, is this Final Fantasy Tactics. Like, I love this game. When I think about that kind of like grid-based RPG combat, you know, where there's positioning and, you know, facing and height advantages and stuff like that. Like, I just wonder why all of them are not just that. Right. Like even the other Final Fantasy Tactics, like the Final Fantasy Tactics Advance games kind of depart from that, the job system and stuff in it. So like, this is the one that I compare everything to. And yeah, like the quality of life and presentation things that they do, like the voice acting in it is very good. You know, it is very well-written dialogue. This is kind of, you know, retranslated. It's an incredibly intricate story with a lot of characters and a lot of like individual political factions and movements and counter coup kind of stuff going on. And having it delivered, you know, in kind of the same style as like Final Fantasy XII dialogue is really neat.
Is the story new, or is it just a retelling of the existing story?
It's still the existing story. Okay. It's still the War of the Lions.
All right.
Yeah. So it's telling that I'm not sure if there's extra kind of content. I think that it is just the story retold. Kind of with the, I think they've even said like, they're trying to gauge, like, do we want to make more of these? Right. Presentational thing that's a little bit of a bummer is, there is no way, as far as I can tell, to play with the original visuals and the voiceover. The sprites, which I love the sprite work in the original Final Fantasy Tactics, the sprites are kind of like mushily upscaled in it in a way that has turned a lot of people off just in screenshots and a little bit of movement. Eventually you get used to it, but it is something that you just kind of notice it looking a little bit fuzzy on the sprites in comparison to the 3D background. I don't understand why they didn't just keep them chunky, because that is a much better look to my mind, or to my eye at least.
You never want to get used to a game's visuals.
Yeah. Otherwise, there are a bunch of like, it's been so long since I've played Final Fantasy Tactics. Like I remember, I could probably, you know, look at every map and say, oh, this is this fight. Like I've got that, but like there are balance changes and stuff going on. But the only thing I've noticed so far is that a guest fighter, an NPC that you have early on in the game is no longer just like absolutely useless. You know, so like there's a little bit of rebalancing for that. But yeah, there's not an awful lot to say besides it is a very faithful remaster of one of the best games ever made.
Very cool.
Yeah.
How many hours is this game?
If you do all the extra stuff, it can be in hundreds. Like I think my first save file on it was the first game that I had broken 100 hours on.
Okay. Very cool. Yeah. I just think about the, you know, when you go back in and remaster stuff like this, things at the end or edge case things that, it's like, man, most people are never even going to see, but they get the love of being updated as well. It's so interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. And like the back part of Final Fantasy Tactics is not the best is the thing. So like most people don't get to that. And it's kind of it's a great story the whole way through, but it becomes a little bit of a shambles. And I don't know. I don't think they addressed it.
I was going to say, is that something that the balance changes could solve?
Maybe. It's just the individual missions get a little bit less interesting as you start going after and trying to defeat basically gods. It becomes like a battle rush more than anything. Just individual, like just not fights that don't engage with the entire like class system and enemy tactics kind of thing. Basically I think like big, like spectacle set piece battles.
Yeah.
Yeah. That don't necessarily that are not as fun as just like here are a bunch of random guys.
Yeah. Which RPG was it where once you get a certain level of powerful, all the enemies that are weaker than you, when you run into them, it would normally trigger a random battle, but instead you just squish them?
The first one that I know that had that was Earthbound, where enemies on the world map, they would, because like it's, you run into the enemy and you get an encounter.
Yeah.
If you are powerful enough, enemies will just like run away from you.
Okay. Yeah. So it sounds like they need something along those lines where you can.
So yeah, I picked that up just to have something to poke at. It is a comfort game for me. Like, you know, I have probably played like the first chapter of this just a bunch of times, even just on my phone. You know, the phone version of it, if it still runs, I haven't done it in a couple years, is still a really good version of the game to play. The bummer about the remaster, and this is just like a price thing, like it's $50, which fine. I know that it's one of the best games. Just take my money. I'll slop it up. It's fine. Mm-hmm. For other people, I'm not entirely sure if it's going to sing for them that way. You know, this $50 remaster of a 30-year-old game. But you know, I can see that being a bummer.
It might get out people trying it for the first time, or like make, you know, that's who it would affect the most.
It's going to go on sale so quickly.
Yeah. I'd be super curious to see like the percentage of people that have bought the game, how many of them have played the original and how many of them are coming to it for the first time.
it's all just us old heads. this is a game exclusively for people age 38 and up.
This is like the Jimmy World reunion tour equivalent for video games.
Oh, I do not want to be in that room. No. Yeah. So that's my two: Silent Hill F and Final Fantasy Tactics, Evilise Chronicles, etc.
Sounds like a segment to me.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, so there are so many heroes in games that would be lost without their handlers, the voices in their ears, giving them information and the players entertainment and witty banter. Mm-hmm. So what are the favorite eye in the sky, voice in your ear characters from games?
Yeah, and Curtis from the Slack has an answer. They take a little while to get to it, saying they're trying to think of examples that are good characters and are also not secretly evil. You know, so you don't get any Frank Fontaine going on here. Not that there's anything wrong with the old switcheroo. I just genuinely cannot think of an example where I like the character for reasons other than it was so cool how they stabbed me in the back.
Reason to like someone, yes. At least a character. Probably shouldn't like someone that does it to you in real life.
Yeah, that'd be weird. I think that's like a form of codependence. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they eventually fall on Futaba Sakura from Persona 5. That is Curtis's answer.
Cool.
Yeah.
I have to look this up because I dipped my toe in Persona 5, but not enough to know exactly who.
Yeah, I don't think I've run into that game. Yeah.
Cool.
Let's see. Ben, what does Warren say?
Warren says, anyone who says there's one better than Rux from Bastion is either lying or hasn't played Bastion. Granted, he's not a conventional guy in the chair, but he serves the purpose as a video game device.
As good of an answer as anything. That's the cowboy sounding guy.
Mm-hmm. I'm blanking on the name from The Big Lebowski.
Sam Elliott.
Stranger.
Sam Elliott. Yeah.
It is just the stranger. He doesn't get a name.
It is just Sam Elliott.
It's just Sam Elliott. There's no pretense to it. Dennis, what does Strawberry Jam say?
Strawberry Jam says, Mike.
So I don't know if this. So they're doing Resident Evil 4, which I understand. Uh-huh. I get it, but I guess Mike, the helicopter pilot, does radio you throughout that one mission. Like, he comes in and helps you, and then he dies. And then Strawberry Jones did this in a Metal Gear character dying cadence. So I don't know. I don't know at all.
Yeah, watch it be some other Mike. I somehow don't know.
Fran has two. They say, maybe this is cheating, but all the voices in your head in Disco Elysium. I don't think that's cheating. That's
a good answer.
I'll count it. They also say Bruce Campbell as the tutorial voice in the Sam Raimi Spider-Man games.
It's a pretty good one.
It's a good answer. Mm-hmm. Hard to fuck with Sam Raimi, or hard to fuck with Bruce Campbell. Hard to fuck with
Sam Raimi's okay too.
Both, yeah.
Yeah. It can be both.
The Doctor Strange movie is pretty good.
Ben, what does Billy Min say?
Billy Min says, Mission Control and Deep Rock Galactic. There are so many voice lines to comment on degenerate gamer behavior. Throw too many barrels in the loading zone. Dancing for too long. Stood with the gang tagging a gold nugget. He has something to say about that. They're so well written, too. For Carl!
For Carl!
Who's Carl?
Rocket Stone.
Okay. No, you're just doing the barks now.
We're rich.
You got to play 40 hours of the game to not find out. You just can't find out from us.
You can't just ask. Yeah. Oh, my God. Let's see here. That was the last one. So I will go ahead and do mine. Strawberry Jam's kind of took it with Resident Evil 4, but I do love Hunnigan and
no
RE4.
Yeah.
Either bespectacled or despectacled. She is great. I love her and Leon's dynamic, which is second only to Leon and Salazar.
And then romantic tension in both. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And then Leon and Sadler, honestly. So it's a game full of excellent mission handlers.
I think the common denominator here is Leon's just really horny.
Yeah, Leon, he can't help but have banter with folks. And kind of an honorable mention, because that's a game that I'm playing now for Watch Out for Fireballs, but the Cryptmaster and Cryptmaster.
Ooh, okay. Nice.
Yeah, yeah. It's an excellent just kind of voice. You know what I mean?
No. Like,
yeah. There's,
that is an oxymoron.
It's just, oh, look at you.
Oh, I need to go take a shower.
my favorite detail, you know, because it's a Grimlock, it's a dungeon crawler, so like you want to poke at all the corners, you know, to see. And anytime you go into a quarter into a corner, just looking for bugs or whatever, he's like, "Are you lurking again?"
If I recall correctly, I think it was the guy who made the game who did the voice for the Cryptmaster as well.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. Stop skulking. let's see, Ben, how about you?
For me, I thought of Portal 2, it was kind of hard to get past that, where it's like,
shit, we damn it, so good.
Not just one, but three great voices in your ear throughout the entire game. So, yeah.
Dennis, all you have is Portal 2, or is Portal 1 now?
You know, I got to scramble. What do I like? I mean, a little bit of a cop out, but in Hades 2, the narrator for that.
Okay.
I believe it is Homer.
Okay.
Confirmed, and the characters refer to him as such. Mm-hmm. That will kind of do this narration on, you know, the Princess of Darkness enters the new world, and then the characters that he's talking about will comment on it.
That was cute in the first game, even.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And so, a little. I like to imagine that as the voice in the ear, and is very endearing.
Yeah.
But also Portal 2. God damn, is it good?
And that's all the answers. Thank you, Dennis, for posting this. Thank you, everybody, for answering. If you would like to participate in these, you can follow us on Blue Sky at thelevelpodcast.bsky.social and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. The end boss. Now it is time for The End Boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games and how we feel about them. Dennis, what did Nintendo do? How is Nintendo confusing us lately?
Somehow do a case study in Uncanny Valley.
Okay.
They posted a random teaser video with just the caption "close to you," close and you capitalized. And it's a little bit, it's like Pixar style animation, except way not as good.
Right.
Everybody
loves fake babies.
Uncanny Valley babies. I'm telling you, the person who animated this has never seen a baby move. Like, they may have seen still images of a baby, but they have never seen a baby in motion, and it shows. But a baby and their mom, playing in a nursery, and the mom gets called away by very ominous knocking.
Okay.
Like, scary. I thought that you were going to hear like creak, hello, blam, kind of knocking. But when the mom leaves the room, all the toys and blocks and the baby's pacifier start moving.
As though animate?
Yeah. It's like think the Toy Story toys come to life scene.
Okay.
Like, it's meant to be cute. And it's got a little bit of a Fantasia, like everything's kind of moving along with the music. Like, it's okay. Very intertwined. But at the same time, it is just so horribly creepy. It feels like it's set up like a horror movie. Like, you know, they don't like jump to life and like, oh, time to play now. It's like one moves a little bit and the baby's like, huh?
It's among the sleep.
Yes. Yeah. It is horrifying. And the kid, you know, chases their pacifier around the room. Mommy eventually comes back in time to see baby's first steps, or maybe not first steps. I don't know. Uh-huh. And then we're off to the races, and no one knows what the hell we just lost.
Yeah. Why Nintendo? This
Maximum Overdrive for kids.
It is. I mean, there's all sorts of speculation. So maybe in a way, this is doing exactly what they want it to do. But the overwhelming sensation that I got watching this video was being unsettled.
Okay.
It's just like nothing in this video moves quite like how it should.
Yeah.
Even for, again, little, you know, personified objects.
Yeah.
Just felt a step off. And because we have no idea what this is for, you know, maybe that's by design, maybe that's not. I have no idea. I seriously was waiting for it to take a horror turn the entire time.
Okay.
And it might yet. There's a good chance that by the time you're listening to this, more has been revealed. Nintendo previously has had a relatively small window between their like teasers and an actual announcement.
Yeah.
But man, this is just the weirdest, most unsettling way to do it.
Yeah. I'm seeing comments. I just looked at the comments on the article that you sent over from Destructoid. Mm-hmm. And like there's like a person saying, okay, possibly could be two things, a Mario Galaxy movie preview, and a new Pikmin game . Yeah. I don't know. If it was a Mario Galaxy movie preview, I think it would be Illumination who did it. And it would not look as unsettling as this.
Yeah, like whoever did this needs to do better.
Yeah, it could have cheaped out.
Well, what do we know about the second Mario movie?
Mario Galaxy.
Okay,
got it. It's literally they're going intergalactic with it.
Yeah, so maybe that's the most probable answer. But good Lord, yeah. So yeah, that's the interneting all over this random ass video.
Yeah. Ben, there are more details out about Mugenics.
Yeah, there were two videos released in the past week, and there's kind of highs and lows with it, possibly. The one that was known was that there's an updated gameplay trailer. They're going to put out a gameplay video, basically an hour-long one every month up until release in February.
Okay.
And so that showed more of the mechanics of the game, where it's like what you do in between runs. Like your Slay the Spire-esque runs where you send out cats to fight things and level up. And basically what you do is you will try and pair cats together and like breed certain cats, and then you damn retired cats to the grave. And then
you cull them?
Pretty much. You throw them in a trash can. But you basically send them
to the river.
You basically send them to different farms, if you will, in different parts of the upstate. But you're sending them to like characters you meet along the way, and they will influence something with the meta progression. So for one of the examples that they show is like there's a builder character that you meet. And so if you send retired cats to that person, then they'll construct rooms on the house that you have. And basically different rooms are where you can put different combinations of cats or whatever to try and increase or decrease the likelihood of them breeding together. Uh-huh. To try and do different things. So that was kind of what the gameplay trailer was revealing. It was also just showing another pass of like going through a run and fighting and attacking, kind of the progression. I think they unlocked like the cleric class as an ability that the cat can have, and kind of showing the dynamics of that. So all that still looks pretty promising gameplay wise. The more controversial part maybe is they released a one-up or what's the name of the video game documentary series? Noclip.
Okay.
They released a Noclip documentary about the game, or the making of the game. And so interviewing with the Edmund McMillan, the creator of the game, was talking about how he was doing designs within the game and having like actual genetic disorders being in the game and having game mechanics built around it. And so this is kind of making it an even more edgier type game, where it's like, this is going to be more divisive, I think, than
Isaac,
than I would have thought, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it's like, I think already in like sharing this game with other people, like people will be like, why is this called eugenics? Or, you know, like, what does this have to do with that? And it's like, oh, well, maybe it's just like a cute theming on it, but it does seem like it is really committing to the idea of like what you do with traits and how you can progress them, you know, like with different, you know, like different things throughout the generations. I think how the guy who's making the game talks about it might be very different than like how it's received, because the interviews that I've seen, he's very like optimistic and very like positive about it, where it's like, even if you have like a certain like negative like trait or something like that, the game kind of reinforces where anything could possibly be a positive if you kind of couple it with other things or conditionally get it to the right place. And so from a game design point of view, it's interesting because like, it's like, how do you build around this so that it's actually a positive and not a negative? And then, and like some of the examples that he gave in the video is like, I think like with like autism can be a trait that the cat can have, and it's like, it'll affect the charisma of the cat, but then it'll improve like whatever the skills of like what they're interested in, like that will be better. And so it's like something where it's like, it's tough to interpret like how it's going to be, because it's like, you know, these are like serious disorders that people do have. So it's like, you don't want to make light of it, but then it's also like, but then you could argue that it could be representation if it's done well. And so it's like, it just sounds like a tightrope. So it's like, so it'll be interesting to see like what the actual mechanics are and like what it, how it plays and everything like that and how it's received. But yeah, like as he's talking about the mechanics, like I think in developing the game, he was thinking a lot about how he has two kids and like thinking about like the traits that he had passed down to them and like how that, you know, affects them and like what he thought might have been nurturers and in fact nature. So it's interesting to see like how deep that mechanic will go in the game of as like how much you're focusing on that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I don't want to clutch pearls, and I don't want to take offense in somebody else's stead.
Yeah.
As it stands, it does seem it is like it is unnecessarily playing with live ammo by using real condition names.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know. There was like a bit of mild upset about something like Rogue Legacy, and it turned out just to be fine.
Yeah.
You know, playing in kind of similar spaces with the individual traits the different characters can have.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm withholding judgment, I guess.
Yeah.
Other than getting a mild.
I think one of the other examples was like ADHD, and it was like your int and one other stat was buffed by a little bit, but then you have 5 seconds to make a move. And so you have to like go really quickly. So it's like, if you're not paying attention, then the cat, it'll just do some random move. And then that's
okay.
It. So it's like,
yeah.
So I don't know. I could. Yeah.
I am not bothered by that as somebody who has ADHD.
Yeah.
So there we go. The entire product is absolved. Relatively mild in the grand scheme of things disorders.
Regardless of how you know, Ernest or whatever the creators are being including that stuff, it sure gives shitty people a lot of ammo to be shitty.
Yeah.
As you know, content gets made around the game and all that stuff. That is such a hard thing to call of like, you know, how much do you try to defend against that? And how much do you just go like, look, people are going to do shitty stuff regardless. We're not going to cater to them when we want to do something that comes from a good place and an earnest place.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I'll be interested to see how it shakes out, I guess. Cause it's like, I could see it going well, or I could see it being insensitive depending upon how it lands and depending upon, So
it doesn't make me less interested in the game.
Yeah.
I guess.
Likewise.
There's also an element of like, you know, in actual like breeding of pets, there's a lot of fucked up stuff that goes on.
Yeah.
From what you've said, Ben, it doesn't sound like he's necessarily trying to make a statement on that front, but it could be a valid way to go about this of laying bare just how, you know, messed up the eugenics approach to breeding different pets is. So,
yeah,
you know, if he's making parallels to how he's raising his kids, it's not territory I would touch. Yeah. that's all I can say about it.
If nothing else, it seems like a subject matter that hasn't really been explored that much, but perhaps that's the case for good reason. But, we'll see.
So. Yeah.
Well, let's say, you've got tons of games that have generational stuff going on, like Crusader Kings 3.
Yeah.
We mentioned Rogue Legacy. Like, it's not untouched territory. Mm-hmm.
Those don't have eugenics in the title.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't immediately.
They're not promoted to core mechanics of the game, I guess.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or done with the same aesthetic of the everything is poopy, want to kill mommy game. Like, we'll see. I think it is wise to reserve judgment for now.
Yeah. Yep. My story is not so much a story, it is like a statement of intent, I guess.
Kay is asking for accountability.
it's more like, oh, this looks really neat. Like, this is a thing you can go play. It is a game that's in beta right now that I saw. It was brought up on like a write-up on some site. I pulled it from my RSS reader, so I don't know exactly where I saw it. But it's a game that's on itch called Microlandia. And it looks to be an actually realistic city builder. Hmm. By which I mean, like, every city builder game does do a certain amount of, like, modeling. Like, oh, and they have specific emphases, right? Like, cities is very traffic-focused. SimCity, back in the day was, like, extremely heavy on, like, zoning, that kind of thing. But there were fantasies involved in all of those, right? Like, you were not playing you're playing both mayor and city planner kind of deal. Roads were very, very cheap to build. Just a bunch of stuff is just like weird and not actually representative of real world dynamics.
Microlandia. to a fun game.
Yes. Microlandia is not interested in concessions to being a fun game.
Many of the games you play, Kay.
Yeah. So, like, though it looks kind of simple, like, just the bullet points on the itch site. I just want to read these. If citizens get sick and there's no hospital capacity, they die. When they can't drive to work because there's no road or excessive traffic, they get fired. When the supply of housing is scarce, landlords get greedy and increase rents. Citizens fall in and out of love and can have children. Roads cost thousands of dollars per kilometer, and it's a huge investment for the city. On the other hand, housing is a housing building will be paid for by the private sector, and it's virtually free.
The last bullet is the most exciting to me, because, like, up to this point, I was like, okay. Well, I hope they've got a good handle on projecting all that. And then I don't know if you want to read the last one.
Yeah. No, they're probably, it's like very carefully modeled from like actual like publications. So like World Bank open data for as long as the U.S. Department of Labor publishes statistics.
Yeah.
The EPA, National Equity Act. Yeah. It's also going to factor in predatory corporate housing and stuff like that. I don't know. It seems like a really interesting experiment. Like, what happens if you play a game that does not, if you play a city builder that does not obscure all of the malign incentives that there are?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like the externalities that kind of arise from stuff, not just pollution.
I want to know the probability that I fall in and out of love based on their statistical data.
Well, I'm looking for it. Yeah, I don't see it immediately.
I'm really curious about this. It looks to be available for a bunch of different platforms, Windows, Mac, all of that. If I have time, because I'm very busy, I might talk about it next week. It's in beta, so who knows how much what you play now will resemble the final product. But I'm just really curious about it. It's called Microlandia.
Is this how we finally get a good voting system? Is we find the people who are really good at this game and then put them in office?
I don't know.
That's not a voting system. That's a meritocracy, something like that.
Kind of. I don't know. I haven't played this. If you are able to succeed at this, you at least have a better understanding of real life dynamics than if you just walked straight out of SimCity and into City Hall.
Oh no, big money would immediately get involved to like change what's going on with, you know, the algorithms, utilizing all these statistics.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a very good example of how easy or how hard it is to get things right when it's one person calling the shots.
Since it's still in beta, I think it's a democracy, but then when it's released, it'll be a 1.0-cracy.
Yeah. 1.0-cracy. Oh man. But yeah, any other comments about that? I realize that I'm fully on my shit, but
I'm glad to know it exists.
Yeah. How does everybody feel about buttoning it up?
Let us button.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to level number 561. We really appreciate you taking the time. As far as admin and announcements go, we recently learned the final panel times for the Portland Retro Gaming Expo. So kind of the rough itinerary of events that I will be involved in is, let me pull this up so I can have accurate times, because there are weird things on the quarter hour.
This affects what day pass I get, so I'm all ears.
Yes. Okay. So Saturday. Let's see here. So Saturday at 1:15 p.m., Gary and I will be on the Retronauts panel. The panel is titled "The Best and Worst of Retro Game Horror." Should be fun. Mm-hmm. Saturday evening at 7 p.m., we'll be holding a meetup at Quarter World, the arcade and bar. That is always a good time. I like that place a lot. It's been forever since I've been there. That's like a quick lift away from the convention center, over on the east side of town. Bring your badges from PRGE so you can have the cover fee waived. And then the Watch Out for Fireballs panel, is going to be on Sunday at 2 p.m., in the Red Auditorium. Check the schedule when you're there, just in case there's any last minute changes. But Gary and I will be talking about the best and worst 7 out of 10 games. This game is 7 out of 10 derogatory, and this game is 7 out of 10 non-derogatory. Sunday is going to be the Duckfeed one. Saturday is the Retronauts one, and should be a good time throughout. I'm looking forward to being there.
Exciting.
You know what to do to help out the show and the network. Leave ratings or reviews, tell your friends, leave comments, and back us on Patreon if you can. patreon.com/duckfeedtv.
You've got me wondering now, are there things people could do to help out the show that would be actively detrimental to the network?
Find people who don't listen to this show but other shows, and I don't know, box their ears or something. Don't do that.
Be nice to people.
Yeah. Be nice to people, especially if they like us. That's just an exercise. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
Not at all.
Okay. I've been Kay. You can find me on Blue Sky at K.zone.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Blue Sky at Furia Games.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. I have one. I have also a Great Depression.
That is pretty good.
That was a good quip, Ben. Ben, what you got?
I got Democracy and Great Depression, which is a nice pairing, I think, in these times.
Okay, let's see here. And Dennis, what do you have?
Yeah, so I have Just Us Old Heads. Okay. I have Despectacled. Compliment to Be Spectacled.
Uh-huh.
And then I too had I had it two ways. I don't know which I like more. I had Democracy, so demo-cracy. And then I had 1.0-cracy, so 1.0-cracy.
I'm torn between One Pointocracy and also a Great Depression.
I'm fine with either. So
I would thumb my scale towards one of the democracy related ones, just because that was a nice little treat at the end of the episode.
Yeah. Let's do the confusing one.
One Pointocracy.
1.0 crazy.
because demo crazy. Like the only way I can think to emphasize that, so it doesn't just look like we're saying democracy, is demo dash crazy, and crazy isn't a word.
No, whereas
one pointocracy, I think reads a little bit more. Yeah,
I support this.
Okay, it is decided.